because you have come to this level of servitude for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, now you are ready to accept them. So he says that, like a father, sometimes I mentioned that. I mean, a father, sometimes he orders his children to do some stuff.
Right.
And for them, he doesn't have any, logic. But he just want to raise his children, obedient to him, so that later in their life, if he commands them to do an important job, then they will be obedient. So he's gradually raising them by commanding some insignificant,
educating them also
issues, and just to develop the a spirit of obedience toward the parents.
We've actually also seen this concept in some Eastern philosophies, and also, funny enough, some martial arts movies.
Mm.
When for example, a disciple of Buddha, for example, of Buddhism, or in Shintoism, when they have new disciples, from what I'm seeing from documentaries, they ask them to do the most menial task ever, like go clean the floor with this one mop, or go and dust off this place. And they continue for hours, and there's seemingly no reason behind this other than just training the spirit of them.
That was a good example. Of course, by no means I don't want to decrease the value of acts like prayer. There are some philosophies other than that. But according to Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi, for some cases where we do not find any philosophy, at least this is one of the philosophies. To raise the spirit of servitude and obeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
At the very least, it is a suggestion.
Yeah.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
So, answering this question, when it comes to the Islamic laws about, for example, eating pork and drinking alcohol, which are forbidden, some people mention some philosophies. For example, when it comes to drinking alcohol, I think all the people, even those people who are used to drink alcohol, they agree that there are some many harms to it.
Or they know it.
They know it for sure. And that is why we see that in many stores in Western countries, people under some age are not allowed even to buy. Alcoholic beverages.
Like in America, you can go to war, drive a car, but you cannot drink until you're 21 years of age.
Exactly. And if you are, for example, drive while you are intoxicated, then it's a big crime. So I think for drinking alcohol, it's not a big deal, and the Islamic law is very clear in this regard, and the philosophy behind that.
Right.
But whether it brings about shamelessness or not, it is mentioned in some narrations. For example, it's been mentioned by Sheikh al-Saduq in Al-Amali, page 666, that the people who used to drink alcohol, they lose their somehow chastity and shame, and then they are more ready to commit other sins, like, for example, adultery, and so on and so forth. When it comes to pork, again, according to many scholars, I'm not talking about, religious scholars, scholars in science, they believe that there are many harms in eating pork, too, because pig is a symbol of a dirty animal, maybe, even as viewed by non-Muslims. Some scholars in science believe that there are many, special germs in the pork, which are very harmful to the body. And maybe this is one of the philosophies for why eating pork is forbidden in Islam. But then some people may claim that we are able to remove all these germs by, for example, increasing the heat, for example.
By cooking it properly.
Yeah.
Right.
So that is why the point is that we need to, pay cautious when we are talking about the philosophies of the Islamic laws.
There are theories, I might add. This is very important because we might say it is a dirty animal, but then research proves it is not a dirty animal, but then it comes again and proves it is a dirty animal.
Yeah.
But we do not then, just to confirm, we do not have a narration that explicitly says eating pork makes you shameless man.
That's the point.
Okay.
As long as we do not have any authentic proof from our sources, like from the Quran and from the narrations, we just mention these issues as possibilities.
Right. Theories, suggestions.
Theories and suggestions, and not as a definite, verdict from the religion of Islam. So the fact that pig is a dirty animal and the pork has a lot of harmful germs have been proved to some extent in science, and it can be one of the reasons that eating pork is forbidden in Islam.
Right.
Now the second point is about the spiritual effects of eating food in Islam. It's a very important topic. There are many narrations in this regard. It's a very important topic when it comes to eating food and also drinking, different halal drinks. There are many narrations which refer to the fact that whatever we consume has a kind of a spiritual effect. The type of food that we consume, the type of halal drink that we drink, it has different effects on your body, on your mental health, and we can discuss that in under four titles. One of them is forbidden foods, and under five titles. One is eating forbidden food, second is israf or extravagance, third is gluttony, fourth is eating makruh food discouraged food, and fifth, the etiquette of eating, and all of them have a kind of a spiritual effect that we need to deal with, inshallah, in the following session.
Inshallah. Dear Sheikh, I thank you for your time and for your insightful knowledge. As usual, we reap great benefit from you. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. Yet again, this has been your host, Musa al-Bahadi, and this was your program, Q&A on Islamic Beliefs. Thank you for tuning in.
إن في الجنة نهرا لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا لبن إن في الجنة نهرا لبن لعلي لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روبا شافت غازا
جروم هيوز بروسلز
سعيد بورزا لندن
Russia, Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
A specter is haunting America. The specter of Striketober. Upwards of 100,000 workers across the U.S. are either currently on strike or potentially just weeks away from it, amid a historic wave of labor actions that's taken the country by storm. 35,000 nurses and healthcare workers have voted to authorize a strike against healthcare giant Kaiser Permanente. 60,000 Hollywood crew members seem headed for a strike amid widespread rank-and-file disapproval of a deal negotiated by union management. And thousands of workers elsewhere have already walked off.
Last week, 10,000 UAW members in warehouse and production jobs at John Deere started currently what is the biggest strike happening in the country. We have 2,000 TWA nurses in Buffalo and 1,400 Kellogg workers. They're also out on strike. About 1,000 mine workers in Alabama have been on strike at Warrior Met Coal since this past April.
These are just some of over a dozen labor actions brewing across the country. As executives have seen profits soar amid the COVID-19 pandemic, workers are insisting on their own piece of the pie. And with supply chain issues plaguing distribution and now hiring signs popping up left and right, they're wielding historic leverage to secure the raises and benefits they say management has been withholding for too long.
There is a tight labor market. Workers are fed up with being mistreated. We have, you know, the most pro-union president ever, potentially even more than FDR. We have a union leader at the Department of Labor who is heading the Department of Labor. Positive union sentiment in polls are the highest it's been in a very long time. Labor has a lot of leverage, and this critical moment is not going to last forever.
With the wind at their backs, many workers say it's time to press their advantage and lock in the wage increases and workplace improvements that have been steadily eroded by decades of neoliberal governance and attacks on organized labor. And with no real sense for just how long this window of opportunity will last, they say it's time to strike while the iron is hot. Wyatt Reed, Washington.
Six years have passed since Iran and several states, namely the US, China, Russia, Britain, France, and Germany, put their signatures to a deal under which Tehran agreed to limit some of its nuclear activities in exchange for sanctions relief. But in 2018, the situation reached a deadlock when former US President Donald Trump backed out of the deal. Not only that, but he also brought back the sanctions despite Iran's display of full compliance. Tehran waited for 1 year before finally cutting back on some of its commitments under the deal. Later on, with the administration of Joe Biden sweeping into power and the White House's declared willingness to return to the negotiating table, Tehran and the remaining signatories went back to the Austrian capital with an agenda to revive the landmark accord. Initially, some progress was made, but long-running issues remain unresolved to this day. In the meantime, the U.S. continues to keep the sanctions in place as a tool of pressure against Iran. Now, with the possibility of a renewed push for the revival of the deal, Tehran says it will not settle for anything less than results that would safeguard the rights of its people.
Iran is a country of dialogue and negotiation. But a negotiation that guarantees the rights of Iranian people and forces all parties to return to their commitments.
Iran has been second to one point, but Washington was the party to violate the deal and should therefore be the party to take the first step by returning to full compliance. Tehran says it will start resuming its commitment only after the complete removal of all U.S. sanctions in a verifiable manner. Action and not words. That's what Iran is demanding. It also says the European partners likewise need to put aside their empty promises and get back to action.
It was the inaction of the European states that emboldened Trump to withdraw from all agreements and violate the JCPOA and Resolution 2231. That happened because the European capitals all acted as only passive observers. We are expecting that all sides come to Vienna with the full understanding that there is no shying away from their commitments, which should be fully implemented under the accord.
Iran is seeking reassurances from the European signatories that such violations would never happen again. It says any renegotiation of the terms of the deal is out of question. The administration of President Ebrahim Raisi is reviewing the details of the previous six rounds of discussions held in Vienna. Now, with speculations on the possible resumption of talks in the coming days and Tehran's firm stance, one can only speculate about how the other parties will fare up.
Food experts in Britain have been advising shoppers to buy Christmas dinner months in advance or they might go without, leading to a surge in sales. Demand for turkey has gone up 400% in recent days, and even toy shops are warning their shelves might be empty soon.
With the pandemic easing, Brexit is back in the news, with shortages of food, fuel and labour taking their toll. And this is bad news for the Conservatives, who promised to get Brexit done.
Under pressure, the government has now been forced to relax immigration rules and start issuing emergency six-month visas for thousands of butchers, poultry workers and HGV drivers to save Christmas and prevent 100,000 animals from being culled. Nonetheless, Prime Minister Boris Johnson insists there is no supply chain crisis, calling the current situation a symptom of an economy in revival.
I hate to be rude about politicians, but I have to say the Prime Minister in this case does appear to be somewhat deluded. Of course, the United Kingdom economy does have some serious supply chain issues. Mind you, so does much of the rest of the world. You only have to look at the issues relating to shipping and such like. Britain has made itself in a more difficult position by adding the phenomenon that is Brexit, which has had added further complications and costs and reduction in the workforce coming from the largest trading bloc in the world, coming into the United Kingdom. And the UK economy is suffering because of it.
For decades, EU nationals have done labour-intensive work on British farms. Labour farmers say British workers just won't do. And the fact is it will take years to train enough Brits to drive heavy goods vehicles. So it might not just be a winter of discontent lying ahead for Britain, but years of adjustment. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's Air Force has launched massive maneuvers in different locations across the country, including Isfahan, Bushehr, Bandar Abbas, Dizful, and Tabriz. The main operational phase of the large-scale drills, codenamed Fadaiyan Harim Vilayat 10, began on Thursday with the participation of manned aircraft and drones. In the first phase of the military drill, aerial targets were shot at different speed and heights. Targets were hit on the ground under different conditions with the use of homemade upgraded heavy and semi-heavy bombs. During this military drill, different types of laser and radar missiles as well as types of rockets and bombs made by young Iranian specialists have been used. This is the first time that all the air bases of the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran are jointly taking part in the military maneuvers, all in their own cities, but being commanded and controlled from the main command center in Tehran.
We used to hold military exercises in one particular location, but this military drill is being conducted at different locations across the country, and they are being commanded and controlled from the command center in Tehran. All the developments can be seen online by commanders at the headquarters, and so far all the operations have been carried out successfully.
Tens of different types of fighter jets, bombers, cargo planes, reconnaissance planes, and drones have taken part in the military drill. Moreover, a Camon 12 drone has successfully destroyed specific targets using smart bombs. At the same time, Karar drones, which have been equipped with 500-pound bombs and rockets, have been able to precisely hit the planned targets. Meanwhile, the manned aircraft of the Air Force of the Army, with the use of the most modern electronic war techniques, disrupted anti-air defense systems of the enemy, preparing the ground for drones to carry out their operations.
This is the first time that such military drill is being conducted all across the country. The main feature of this maneuver is a concentrated command for non-concentrated operations. All the missiles, rockets, and bombs which are being used in this military drill have been produced by Iranian specialists. We have used precision-guided Qasid and Yasin bombs. Moreover, we have used our combat drones like Camon 12, which is able to strike its target from a distance of 10 to 15 kilometers.
This massive maneuver is aimed at using an integrated command and control network, and supporting operational and intelligence systems in the integrated network of the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In the drill, technology-based and digitalized equipment, weaponry, and systems have been used.
This military exercise shows that the Air Force of the Army is well prepared to protect the country's territorial integrity and has full control over the airspace of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Winter is coming, and from the looks of things, it will be a long, harsh, and very cold one. But at the same time, the world is in the midst of an unprecedented energy crisis with dire economic, social, and political ramifications. Brent crude has surged to a five-year high of over $80 per barrel, while gas prices are up over 500% year on year. The International Energy Agency says the global energy crunch is expected to boost oil demand by about 500,000 barrels a day. Analysts say the energy crisis is rooted in soaring demand as the economic recovery from the coronavirus pandemic takes hold, and the production level has simply failed to keep up with demand. However, some immediate measures could easily resolve this crisis. One such fix would be the removal of US sanctions on Iran, which enjoys one of the largest hydrocarbon reserves in the world. The flow of Iranian oil into the global market, for example, would be vital in easing the crisis.
Until a couple of months ago, it was not very important for the world that Iran is under sanctions because supply exceeded demand. But the current trends in the global market may put pressure on consumer countries, Europeans and countries like India and China or U.S. allies to push Washington to lift sanctions.
Iran has repeatedly underlined its ability to swiftly increase its crude production to help alleviate the global shortage. Its oil minister recently said people in the United States and some European countries are paying the price for their leaders' unwise policies. Javad Oji stressed that Iran, on several occasions, displayed its goodwill to help stabilize the oil market and resolve the global energy crisis. But U.S. sanctions are standing in the way. People in Lebanon, who have been facing gasoline and diesel shortages and electricity blackouts, bear witness that ways are found where there is mutual will. Iran has recently been delivering shipments of fuel to energy-starved Lebanon, despite U.S. sanctions targeting both countries. That was achieved through the determination of both Iran and the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah. Iran had also earlier dispatched fuel shipments all the way to Venezuela. Now, as millions of people around the globe are bracing for a hard and long winter, it's worthwhile to ask how much of the ordeal could be averted through a similar international resolve.
Fear is growing in Indian-controlled Kashmir following a series of shooting incidents across the region that killed around a dozen civilians, including four non-local workers. The fear doubled among the non-local residents after police said non-locals should reach army camps and police stations. Vananjit Kumar has been working in Kashmir for the last 12 years. Each year he stays here for 6 months and returns home with his hard-earned money. But this year, he's moving ahead of time.
My family back home is worried. They insisted upon my return. I have worked for so many years here, but I have never seen such chaos. The situation here has never been right, but we were never involved. This time, it's different.
Dhananjit Kumar and many like him are on the move, while many others have sought police protection till they manage a way out. Following the deadly October violence in Kashmir that resulted in more than 33 killings, which included 9 Indian Army personnel, 11 civilians, and 13 pro-freedom fighters in different incidents, the administration issued an alert across the war-weary Indian-administered Kashmir. Intelligence reports warn of attacks on power projects, emergency landing strips, and other government infrastructure. New Delhi has installed additional security forces across Kashmir after intelligence reports warned of more attacks.
We are doing our best to neutralize the terrorists who are behind the civilian killings. We have killed around 11 terrorists in October till now, and we'll do our best to ensure the safety and security of our people. It's not a security lapse. The targets were soft, and now we beefed up and more vigilant.
After India stripped Kashmir's autonomous status in August 2019, people of the region were promised development, prosperity, and greater opportunities. However, media reports suggest the situation in the region has slipped from bad to worse due to the absence of local political activities and implementation of rules and laws without taking people of Kashmir on board. Kashmir is a dispute between India and Pakistan since the partition of Indian subcontinent in 1947. The two have fought wars over the territory and claimed the region in full, but rule it in parts. The fresh spate of violence in Indian-administered Kashmir is seen by many as a politically motivated action. People of Kashmir urge the world community to help resolve this geopolitical dispute between India and Pakistan before they engage in war and devastate the leftover lives. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
On Tuesday, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen greeted Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki at the beginning of a five-hour debate in the European Parliament. The niceties didn't last long.
Don't try to divert. That's the debate right now here about the rule of law and the primacy of European law. Don't try to run away and to escape that debate.
Morawiecki insists Poland's constitution has primacy over EU law, and this is infuriating the bloc's establishment. Amongst other things, EU authorities are worried the Polish government is trampling on fundamental rights, judicial independence and freedom of the press. Morawiecki insists hypocrisy is at play when rule of law is debated.
Some member states maintain tax havens. It means that in the EU, the richest member states are making even more money. How is this part of our EU values?
Criticism towards Morawiecki kept on coming, however.
For years, you have been infecting the minds of Polish people with lies and manipulation about European rules and regulations.
The Polish Prime Minister raised a myriad of issues, ranging from the EU's energy crisis to the refugee situation, but the focus repeatedly came back to him. Analysts say the EU is in no position to preach about rule of law in the light of its treatment of minority groups in the bloc, such as refugees. The problem has become worse due to recent developments in Afghanistan.
What this is doing is this is leading to a rise in xenophobia. These refugees, these people who, as I said, are at the lowest possible ebb, are now being subject to abuse and to hate crimes.
Inside the chamber, Morawiecki was criticised over his country's treatment of refugees, but he certainly was not without his supporters. Lawmakers want the European Commission to withhold billions of euro in funding to Poland, but that could be a lengthy process.
When the Commission initiates proceedings against a member state, it normally takes many years before there is a conclusion to the case. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Thousands of Muslims marched through major streets of Suleja to mark the birthday anniversary of Prophet Muhammad. For members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, the celebration has been going on for a week because it was designated as the Unity Week by the late founder of the Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini.
We all believe that the Prophet is our Prophet, one Prophet, no any other Prophet apart from him. And he unites, he brought the Quran through Archangel Jibril, and he is the one that show us the path, the direction, and a way to follow. The whole people in this town are now out to celebrate the birthday without any of us thinking that he will be paid.
Members of the Islamic movement said Muslims must unite to defeat the seeds of discord planted by enemies of Islam in the name of Shia-Sunni sectarian divide. They condemned the various terror attacks resulting in the killing of Muslims in Afghanistan and in Nigeria, which they said may not be unconnected with global arrogance to plunge the Muslim communities into chaos in order to steal resources. These incidents, the Islamic movement said, is the result of disunity. So Muslims around the world must unite. Members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria recall that their leader, Sheikh Ibrahim al-Zazaki, has always emphasized that unity among Muslims is about understanding each other and working together for the benefit of the larger Islamic Ummah. They said that although this is an auspicious occasion, it is important to recall the 2015 Zaria massacre,
We are more than 347 of their members who are killed. Benjamin Abdullahi, Suleja.
With a few days to go to the fourth Mustafa Prize, the laureates of the Science and Technology Award are gearing up to nab the prize. The five winners were announced on October 12th in a press conference held in the headquarters of the Mustafa Science and Technology Foundation. They're now in Iran, visiting different scientific entities, including Iran's High Council for Cultural Revolution. They're here to talk about their scientific achievements and the significance of the international prize.
I'm extremely happy to be selected for this prestigious Mustafa Prize. It's a big honor and a great privilege to see that our collective effort with international collaboration, Atlas, Antares, and KM3Net recognized with this prestigious prize. And I would thank a lot and all my gratitude to the Mustafa Foundation for this noble and for this exemplary manner they are doing their work to promote scientific excellence in Muslim world.
First launched in 2015, the Mustafa Prize honors scientific breakthroughs in the Muslim world. It is awarded to Muslim scientists in four categories of information and communication science and technology, life and medical science and technology, nanoscience and nanotechnology, and all areas of science and technology. This year, out of 515 works submitted to the Iran-based secretariat, five nominees were selected as winners. Laureates will be granted cash prizes amounting to $1 million.
In the last four decades, we have been working in the field of natural parachemistry, and that has resulted in the discovery of many drugs.
That's why you are going to receive the award.
Yeah, I feel extremely honored to receive this very prestigious award. This award is already very well known globally, because of its excellence and the quality of assessment to select people is absolutely wonderful.
The scientific event is held biannually during the Islamic Unity Week, which celebrates the birthday of Prophet Muhammad. This year, the award ceremony falls on October 21st in Tehran, with the attendance of 50 scientists and scholars from 15 countries.
The Mustafa Prize says after four rounds, it has achieved its primary goal: to motivate Muslim scientists to compete for excellence. But the prize eyes for a bigger goal. It says it seeks to elevate science and technology in Muslim countries to, quote, revive the Islamic golden age in science. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be examining a very important question, and that question is this. People often ask, what is the importance of unity? We should keep one thing in mind, and that is this. We should see what the seerah and the conduct of the Ahlul Bayt themselves were in this regard. We know that following the events that occurred after the demise of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, we know that we are of the belief that the caliphate, which was rightly a right for our imams, was usurped from them, and they were denied this right. Nevertheless, even though the imams were in a position to ask for their right and to fight for their right, and nevertheless, they, in order to preserve the unity of the Muslim Ummah, they did not openly stand up and physically and forcefully attempt to secure this. Prime example for this is the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, who was the flag bearer of unity of the Islamic nation, and who, in order to preserve this, remained silent for 25 years, and apparently he cooperated with the existing governments in order to, for the betterment of this of the Muslim nation, and also to preserve this unity. There are many beautiful sayings narrated from Imam Ali regarding this unity. One of the beautiful sayings which have been narrated from Imam Ali in the Nahjul Balagha, and this, you can find this in letter 47, is this. Imam Ali says, "Usikum wa jami'e waladi." He says, I advise you, my two sons, and all of my children, wa ahli, and my family, wa man balagahu kitabi, and whoever this letter reaches, bitaqwa Allah, the fear of God, I advise them to adopt the fear of God, wa nazme amrikum, also I advise them to be organized in their lives and in their affairs, wassalahe dhate bainikum, and to rectify your relations with one another, which is an indication to this importance of unity. فَإِنِّي سَمِعْتُ جَدَّكُمَا صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ. The Imam says, for verily I have heard your grandfather, the Prophet صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ, يَقُول, I heard him saying, صَلَاهُ ذَاتِ الْبَيْنِ أَفْضَلُ مِنْ عَمَّةِ الصَّلَاةِ وَالصِّيَامِ, that rectifying your relations with one another, or unity with one another, is more virtuous than praying and fasting all year long. And this is a beautiful tradition, shows us the importance of unity and rectifying our relations with one another, to the extent that the Imam says it's even better than praying and fasting. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the importance of unity. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
the limelight.
A record 1.7 million migrants from around the world, many of them fleeing pandemic-ravaged countries, were encountered trying to enter the United States illegally in the last 12 months. Capping a year of chaos at the southern border with Mexico, which has emerged as one of the most formidable challenges for the Biden administration. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Eileen Sullivan and Miriam Jordan. The piece is titled, Illegal Border Crossings Driven by Pandemic and Natural Disasters Soar to Record High. Stay with us for more of Eileen Sullivan and Miriam Jordan's article. Record 1.7 million migrants from around the world, many of them fleeing pandemic-ravaged countries, were encountered trying to enter the United States illegally in the last 12 months, capping a year of chaos at the southern border with Mexico, which has emerged as one of the most formidable challenges for the Biden administration. It was the highest number of illegal crossings recorded since at least 1960, when the U.S. government first began tracking such entries. The number was similarly high for the 2000 fiscal year, when border agents caught 1.6 million people, according to government data. Single adults represented the largest group of those detained in the fiscal year that ended on 30th of September, at 1.1 million, or 64% of all crossers. There were also large numbers of migrant families, more than 479,000, which is about 48,000 fewer than during the last surge in family crossings in 2019. But the nearly 147,000 children whom border agents encountered without parents or guardians was the largest number since 2008, when the government started tallying unaccompanied minors. Finding shelter for these migrant children until they can be released to relatives or other sponsors in the country was one of President Biden's earliest challenges. As of Friday, 22nd of October, nearly 11,000 remained in government custody. The crossers hailed from around the globe, many of them seeking economic opportunity as the coronavirus pandemic erased hundreds of millions of jobs. Border agents caught people from more than 160 countries in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, with Mexico accounting for the largest share. A public health rule invoked by President Donald J. Trump at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020 to seal the border has remained in place under the Biden administration. Over the last 12 months, the Border Patrol has carried out more than 1 million expulsions of migrants back to Mexico or to the migrants' home countries. Agents used the public health rule to expel migrants they encountered 61% of the time and to expel families 26% of the time. President Biden has walked a fine line between trying to control the influx and put in place a more humane approach to border enforcement. Republicans have blamed President Biden's promises to reverse Trump-era immigration policies for fueling the surge, as word spread that the country's borders had become easier to breach. What we're seeing at the southern border is a crisis, Mike Pompeo, a former U.S. Secretary of State under Donald Trump, said on Twitter on Friday afternoon, 22nd of October. If the Biden administration would have kept the policies we had in place, this would have never have happened. In particular, Republican lawmakers have been sharply critical of the admission of tens of thousands of unaccompanied children, along with many families, who would have been turned back under the Trump administration. The Border Patrol released nearly 250,000 migrants into the country, including some with instructions to appear before an immigration judge for removal proceedings, according to Customs and Border Protection, CBP. Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, called on Friday for the Biden administration to declare a national emergency on the southern border with Mexico. The crossings this year followed a relative lull in 2020, when just over 400,000 people were encountered trying to enter the country illegally. The drop was largely attributed to the pandemic's impact on international travel, which kept migrants leaving far-flung countries from reaching Mexico, their entry point to the United States. Even as the Biden administration continues to use the Trump-era public health rule to deter migration, people from Mexico and the Northern Triangle countries, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, have crossed without authorization in high numbers for several consecutive months. In addition to the pandemic, two hurricanes destroyed livelihoods and homes in Guatemala and in Honduras, where extortion and violence from gangs have persisted in many communities, further fueling an exodus. The sustained increase has led to overcrowding and sometimes chaos at processing centers along the southern border with Mexico, where migrants must be held until the U.S. authorities have conducted background checks and entered every single person into a computer. More than 655,000 Mexicans were arrested, the most from any one country, according to the latest data, along with a combined total of more than 700,000 from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. Together, migrants from Mexico and Central America represented 78% of the total. Over the past year, there was a significant jump in the number of migrants, mostly families, from Brazil, which has been in the grips of the worst COVID crisis in South America. More migrants also arrived from Venezuela, from Nicaragua, and from India, among many others. Southern border apprehensions previously reached such high levels in the late 1990s, peaking in 2000, when many migrants who entered the country unlawfully were drawn to jobs in construction industry, food processing, and restaurants. As in the past year, most of those who entered were single adults from Mexico. Many of them tried more than once to sneak into the country, usually until they succeeded, because they did not face significant legal consequences, said Jessica Bolter, an analyst with the Migration Policy Institute. She added that there were lots of incentives for migrants to try to cross over and over. When the Trump administration first invoked the current public health rule, known as Title 42, officials said it was needed to avoid the spread of the coronavirus in the United States. But it has had the unintended consequence of encouraging hundreds of thousands of desperate people to make repeated attempts to enter the country. Many of those subjected to the rule are expeditiously returned to Mexico, often by bus, only to try again just a few days later. Before the public health rule was put in place at the beginning of the pandemic, migrants caught entering the country without authorization could be criminally prosecuted and detained for months. In September, about 25% of arrests were of repeat crossers. The high rate of recidivism suggests the majority of border crossers in recent years have been caught, which was not the case during previous peaks. The number of Border Patrol agents has increased substantially in the last decade, and technology like heat sensors, K-9 cameras and drones make it difficult to evade capture. There were not nearly as many agents. They had little technology, and there were a lot of easy places to cross, said Jeff Passel, a demographer at the nonpartisan Pew Research Center who studies the population of those who enter without authorization. Data shows the Border Patrol now catch almost everybody who tries to cross illegally. When President Joe Biden took office, the administration was aware of an uptick in the number of migrants heading north, but it appeared to be caught flat-footed by the large jump in the numbers that followed and by how long the trend has lasted. The data released on Friday, 22nd of October, also shows a sharp increase in the number of Haitian migrants who crossed last month, more than 17,000, or 38% of the total number of Haitians who were caught crossing illegally over the past 12 months. The Biden administration's response to their arrival in high numbers in Del Rio, Texas, has drawn broad criticism and raised concerns over the mistreatment of black migrants in particular. Of the Haitians who crossed in September, 36% were turned away under the public health rule, including more than 2,500 who had arrived in family units. In all, the Biden administration used the rule to turn away 54% of all the migrants caught crossing illegally last month. To comply with a recent court order, the Biden administration has said it plans next month to resume a Trump-era policy known as Remain in Mexico, which mandates that asylum seekers wait in Mexico for their immigration court hearings in the United States, pending agreement from the Mexican government. The administration, early this year, had ended the program, which accounts for some of the increase in crossings this year. The program has been criticized for subjecting thousands of migrant families to violence, including kidnappings for ransom in Mexican border towns controlled by drug cartels.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Inhabitants of Stars. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. The Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the first infallible Imam, has said, "These stars in heaven are cities like the cities of earth. Each of the cities is connected with the other cities through a column of light. It is very selfish to suppose that our earth is the only inhabitable planet and millions of other celestial planets are all underutilized, silent, and without any inhabitant. Today, we know of detailed scientific studies into the conditions required for life to exist on other planets, which suggest that millions and millions of these may be inhabited, and it is likely that many of them may enjoy more developed civilizations because life had started there thousands or millions of years before it did on the earth. Such scientific knowledge did not exist 14 centuries ago, and hence the tradition that we recited from Imam Ali alayhi salam is nothing less than a miracle. This is the viewpoint of Ayatollah Makarim Shirazi. And I think this is something that we all wonder sometimes, that when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not create anything useless, then how can be so many galaxies, so many planets, so many Milky Ways just created in vain? Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are talking about the inhabitants of stars. And we said that we have some interesting traditions that allude and point to, and some of them very clearly highlight the fact that life exists on other planets too. Now, which planets those are, and whether, you know, what it means by life existing on those planets, it is something that is a topic of discussion amongst these scholars. But one thing is very interesting is that when we look at this entire universe that Allah has created, with this approach, we are compelled to see our own insignificance. So Earth, which is a very small planet, which is a very confined and small and limited place that we live on, this place in itself, when you compare it with other planets, is so negligible that one cannot even imagine. If you ask the scientists, they tell you like how insignificant we are as Earth. And then within this Earth, there are so many countries, there are so many, you know, vast places. And out of those countries, I live in a very small province. And then within that province, I live in a very small city. And then within that city, I live in a very small house. So look how insignificant human beings are. Yet, when it comes to arrogance, we are probably, one can argue, one of the most arrogant creatures that can be found out there. This is a lesson for us. We need to recognize and realize who we are, and we start realizing the greatness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.